Moneyline with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe here in Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. We had a fun first hour. If you missed it, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcasts. Also, the GM Shuffle podcast, new episode drops Monday morning, tomorrow morning. So go ahead and get the GM Shuffle wherever you get your podcast as well. We got a fun second hour on deck for you guys. Matt Maiocco of NBC Bay Area will join us to break down the 49ers, the defending NFC champions. What can they do to get over the hurdle and win a Super Bowl? Also, where do things stand with the Brandon Ayuk contract negotiations as well? Then in 30 minutes from now, Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, will join us to break down tonight's game two between the Dallas Mavericks and Boston Celtics. But Michael, earlier this week you put up a poll on Twitter, which I'm loving these things, man. You're getting good engagement on them. They're interesting conversations, interesting questions. And the poll that you put up was, who's the most valuable non-quarterback in the National Football League? The four players: Tyreek Hill, TJ Watt, Justin Jefferson, Nick Bosa. Then also you asked if people had other submissions, go ahead and write them in the reply as well. The leader of the poll was Tyreek Hill, 36%, Watt 31%, Justin Jefferson 20%, and Nick Bosa at 12%. Some other popular answers: Myles Garrett, the reigning defensive player of the year, Micah Parsons, Christian McCaffrey, the reigning offensive player of the year, and then Chris Jones of the Kansas City Chiefs. Did anything surprise you from your findings in this poll that you put up earlier this week?
The lack of respect for Nick Bosa. I mean, like, what did this poor this guy is the best defensive player on the field. Look, TJ Watt is incredible. What makes TJ Watt so unique is he runs, he has the same move. He doesn't really change what he does. You just got to block it, and it's hard to do. And we know that the Steelers' win percentage when TJ's healthy is pretty high, right? And so I respect, and he deserves all the votes he got. But the difference between 31 and 12, to me, isn't the difference between their talent levels of Nick Bosa, who is the highest paid non-defensive player, non-offensive player in the league, and TJ Watt. So I really think, to me, that was what surprised me the most, because Bosa requires double teams, chips. You can't go into a game without saying, wait a minute, who's blocking Nick on this play?
Yeah. I almost think that people probably look at these polls and confuse it with who's just the most valuable non-QB in a vacuum, and they kind of look at it from who's most valuable to their team. Because I think most people would say Watt's probably more valuable to the Steelers than Bosa is to the Niners, given the fact that the Niners have a good quarterback, they have a really good offensive head coach, and they have a really talented roster versus Pittsburgh. I'm not saying Pittsburgh's devoid of talent, but TJ Watt is the unequivocal best player on that team, and they're led mainly by that defense, whereas the Niners are sort of led by the offense, even though the defense has talented players. I guess that's maybe why people were leaning towards TJ Watt. I admittedly probably would have voted for TJ Watt in this poll just because of the record, 1-10 without him straight up ever since he joined the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, they just never win essentially when TJ Watt doesn't play in these games, as we saw in the playoffs. Although I think that if whether TJ Watt played in that game against Buffalo or not, they probably were going to lose that game, but they just don't win without TJ Watt. So that would be where my vote went. I was just a little bit surprised. I mean, Tyreek Hill is the best receiver in the league and for my money, but for him to kind of run away with the poll a little bit as the most I always gravitate towards pass rushers when I think about most valuable non-quarterbacks. Maybe that's just my own personal bias.
Well, I agree with you. I'm all in on that too, but I think you got to understand the value that Tyreek Hill brings to the offense, and having Omar Kelly on talking about the Tua contract, where Tua was talking about the market, right? And he's right. The market is the market. If you want to pay a guy, you got to pay him whatever the market is. And when you use that terminology, you throw out stats, you throw out the innate evaluation, because you may think your guy's the 10th highest, best quarterback in the league, but the market says you should pay him in the top five. We got to see how that works. Mm-hmm. But Hill makes everybody else a better player. There's no player in the league today, including Justin Jefferson, that when he walks on the field, every defensive coordinator is holding their breath, because the way they motion him, the way they utilize him, he can catch it out and take it to the house. He has this unique ability to have speed along with, let me go back, the ability to have rare speed and rare quickness is unparalleled that I've seen in my career. You know, Barry Sims had great quickness. He didn't have that elite rare speed, right? Barry Sanders, he didn't have that. And this kid has the combination. He can stop and start like nothing I've ever seen in my life. And so he tilts the field so dramatically in that favor. And to think what Miami paid for him in terms of draft compensation because of all the off-the-field incidents that have gone on. But I can understand and respect the fans who put him in this category. I completely get it. But to me, then after him, there's no really other receiver that the field gets tilted like that. The defensive men have to step up. They have to be recognized.
No, 100% there. It gets scary watching Tyreek Hill. It's like a video game, the way he's able to just kind of change directions and never have to slow down to do so. And once he gets going, see you later. Nobody's catching him on the football field. Well, let's get to some of those fan replies. And we appreciate everybody chiming in on the poll. We do encourage this sort of engagement with these polls. Deep Sharon went ahead and responded and said, only one right answer. Tyreek Hill affects the point spread by 2.5 points, by far the most of any skill player. It's subjective a little bit in terms of how much, but he definitely affects it most of any non-quarterback in terms of the point spread, for sure. I think that I agree with that sentiment. I just don't know what the exact number is. It also depends on what the point spread is as well. Monty House Africa went ahead and responded, said, Bosa or Watt, there will never be a time where a wide receiver is more valuable than a pass rusher. Not Randy Moss, not Jerry Rice, not Justin Jefferson, and not Tyreek Hill. I think you disagree with that a little bit.
Get that man's name. I mean, just keep preaching. Can you just keep preaching? You know, but we live in this world, Femi, where, you know, we have Ryan Poles being applauded for not taking a pass rusher. You know, it's like we are in this Madden world of we're playing on our computer and we've taken away physicality. We've taken away the essence of what football is. Walsh would say this all the time. You know, you need to be able to have somebody who can close the game out in the fourth quarter while rushing the passer. Like if he were to come in back, and I wish he could, to the world and watch the Atlanta Falcons, he would look at their offense and say, wow, you're really good. But do you realize you're going to be an 8-8 team or a 9-8 team? Because you can't rush the passer. Like you can't win. You need a closer. Yep. You need Mariano Rivera to close the game out. You need somebody to go on the field. And as good as Andy Reid has been over his career, he had a hard time closing game out because if their defense couldn't stop, go back to that Super Bowl or the conference championship game against the Patriots where they just couldn't get a stop on third down. They couldn't get one. Brady's throwing slants to Edelman, flipping the play, moving it around. It became problematic. And finally, Andy said, look, enough is enough. We need to win with some defense. This is what I don't understand. If you brought somebody in from outside and said, analyze the football market. And I'm talking about somebody who's an investor, somebody who does this for a living. They would say, well, it looks like the trend by the teams that are winning are to go to try to put money on defense. And yet that's not the case. I mean, there's been this overwhelming love affair to put it all on offense. And I was reading an article the other day, which is fascinating, that, you know, this was written by somebody in the business world. It's called The Value of Money. And when you go through it, this man has went through every single team with quarterbacks and broke down the percentage given to the quarterback over the as the cap. And he concludes his last paragraph of the conversation is, therefore, if I am a fan of the Browns, Deshaun Watson holds 25% of the cap. Dak Prescott, 21.7% of the cap. Rams, Matthew Stafford, 19.4%. Kyler Murray, 19.2%. Or the Giants, Daniel Jones, 18.8%. I wouldn't be optimistic about their upcoming season. Because over this course of the decade, when you look at those variables in terms of paying the quarterback this much, you cheat some other area of your team.
Yep.
And I think that goes into team building. And that's the art that we're losing in the league because we have too many people playing Madden. We have too many people think, well, just get me another receiver. Like Adunze, I think whether Adunze is great or not, I don't know. We won't know. But it's hard to get him on the field when you have two guys that are already good in DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. Like, now you're an 11 personnel team, and your right tackle you're not sure can block anybody, and you're damn sure your left tackle can't block one-on-one all the time. And all it takes is one bad play, right? All it takes is T.J. Watt strip sacks on Caleb Johnson and a game, Caleb Williams, and you know, the game's over, right?
Yep. It really is remarkable. And you talk about how it's allocated to one player, like the quarterbacks here with Watson taking up 25%. We had Omar Kelly on in the first hour. He was saying, hey, they were injured. Well, one way to kind of combat those injuries is to have some depth. It's hard to have depth when you're paying all this money to some guy that's like 25%, 21% of the cap there. And it's hard to be optimistic. You got to free yourself from the jail like the Minnesota Vikings did earlier this offseason. How about this comment from Rick? He says, one is Tyreek Hill, but two, Christian McCaffrey, three, Travis Kelce. Hasn't been a defensive player worthy of the top spot since prime Von Miller. But I kind of want to spin this question to you this way. After Tyreek Hill, who is the most valuable non-quarterback who plays on offense? Is it McCaffrey?
I think it is because of McCaffrey's versatility. Look, McCaffrey's not a running back. He's a weapon. He is a weapon. He changes the game because simply where he lines up creates problems for the defense. If he's in the back spot, let's call that the A spot, you can handle that. If he's in the slot, let's call that the B slot. Now, what are we doing? If he's in the C spot, which is outside the numbers, what are we doing with that? You got to have an answer for every one of this. You can't sit at home and just say, well, we're going to cover him. No, I mean, you as a coordinator have to say, okay, if he's in the A spot, we got that. If he's in the C spot, we got that. Well, okay, what are we doing here? Now, what happens if Kyle puts him in the F spot, which is on the wing? What are we handling there?
It's a lot of possibilities for the 49ers, who we will discuss coming up next with Matt Maiocco of NBC Bay Area.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Man, we're handing out great deals here at VSiN. I mean, for 50 cents a day over the next 13 months, you could become a better better. All you have to do is go to VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code Lombardi. I mean, you're going to get the premium analysis. You're going to get the betting splits, the betting systems, the best bets, the percentage, the ROI, all the stuff that you need to help you become a better better. And on top of that, our new NFL betting guide is coming out later this month. This guide is your ultimate resource for the football season, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, and of course, best bets for the upcoming NFL season. Don't miss out on this limited time deal. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe. Promo code Lombardi. You must use that promo code if you want this deal. Make it happen for yourself today. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Would you have a best bet right now, Michael, as we sit here on June 9th for the NFL? A bet that you love so much?
You know, that's a great question. I think to me, when you look at the schedules, like I think Miami, I think the Jets on their over win total, if I sit right here and be honest, I think that's a play I would look at. I think Miami under I would look at because I'm not sure it's all going to come together. I think the transition of defensive coordinators. I also think Baltimore can't duplicate what they did lose to Mike McDonald. This is the time of the year where I tend to focus on the coaches that have been lost and the coaches that have been gained. So I center on that. We always focus on the players, which are very important, but also how are they being utilized, the scheme. So, you know, those would be just a couple, I think, to me, that jump off at me. I'm not sure Miami's going to be able to be as good as they once were.
Yeah, they're an interesting team. I agree with you on the Baltimore Ravens. And it's not disrespect because Harbaugh and Lamar, they win a lot of games and they've won a lot of them together. But it's hard to duplicate what they did a season ago, Lamar winning MVP. But joining us now to talk about the team that won the NFC last year, that's the San Francisco 49ers. It's the one and only Matt Maiocco, covers the 49ers for NBC Sports there in the Bay Area. And he's joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Matt, thanks for hanging out with us here this morning on the Lombardi Line. We really appreciate it. And we'll start off with wide receiver Brandon Ayuk, second team All-Pro this past season, did not attend mandatory mini camp. Where do things stand with the contract negotiations between Ayuk and the 49ers?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, they kind of stand where they've stood with players the 49ers have tried to get contracts done with in the past. I mean, each year it seems like they have a draft pick, you know, coming up on a second contract, that's going to be one of the top paid players in the game at his position. So, you know, it goes back to George Kittle, followed by Fred Warner, followed by Deebo Samuel. Last year was Nick Bosa, and all of those deals, there wasn't a whole lot happening this time of year. And it wasn't until, you know, some sort of deadline approached. In the case of the first three guys, it was training camp. You know, right on basically the eve of training camp, they get long-term extensions done with those guys to make them very highly paid players. Last year is right before the start of the regular season. So the difference with this one is that the 49ers have paid a lot of guys. You know, they have basically, you know, one of the top paid players at each position on the field, except for quarterback. Next year, at this time, we'll be talking about Brock Purdy's new contract because he'll be eligible for a contract extension. And so, you know, he'll go from being one of the lowest paid players on the team to one of the highest paid players in the league. So 49ers have to determine, and I'm sure they've been doing this behind the scenes, is, I mean, everybody knows what the market value is now, or the market rate for a top flight wide receiver like Brandon Ayuk, you just mentioned, is a second team all pro guy. The question is whether it makes sense for the 49ers to pay that money to Ayuk, have all that money wrapped up in Ayuk, Deebo Samuel. They just re-signed Juwan Jennings to a 2-year deal that pays him a pretty good sum of money too, $7.5 million a year, while also having a first round pick at wide receiver. So that's where the 49ers have to determine whether a long-term contract at this stage makes sense for the overall health of that roster.
Matt, but the one thing I think we have to consider is that Ayuk is the real only outside receiver. Jennings can do it to a degree, maybe Pearsall, maybe Cowling, who they drafted. But as an outside receiver, Ayuk's ability to play, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Ayuk would be the priority. And then what they do with Deebo, whether they trade him, whether they get value for him, would be the move to make because they have too many inside receivers. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think a lot of, you know, the reason they got Ricky Pearsall was they do believe that he can play inside and outside, and he's good against man coverage, which was an issue for the 49ers in the Super Bowl last year. And the Chiefs really locked them up, especially on third downs with being able to play sticky coverage. I mean, I just don't see, I see what you're saying, and I totally agree. Like you won't be able to keep Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk together. Samuel has 2 more years left on his contract. I do think that all this talk about the contract for Brandon Ayuk and what the 49ers might do, it's irrelevant for this year because, you know, Brandon Ayuk obviously wants his contract and, you know, he held out of the mandatory mini camp to put a little leverage on the 49ers. But I think that wide receiving core will remain intact this year. So even if nothing happens with Brandon Ayuk's contract now heading into the 2024 season, you know, they will still have him on the team. They'll be playing under the fifth year option, $14.1 million. You know, they can kind of kick the can down the road a little bit if they don't feel like, you know, paying him whatever that number is, $28, $30 million a year is the right thing to do. Now, if they do sign IU to the extension, then that pretty much, you know, puts a, you know, the clock is now ticking on Deebo Samuel. And then at the end of this season, you know, that's when they would be probably looking to make a deal and lighten that salary load a little bit. So I do think that the four guys that we mentioned, Ayuk, Samuel, Jennings, and Pearsall will be on the team this year. And then it's a matter of how the team decides to handle this going forward. If they sign Ayuk to the extension, then I don't think Deebo Samuel's on the team in 2025. And if they don't sign him to an extension, I don't think he would be Brandon Ayuk. I don't think he would be on the team in 2025.
No, so I guess what I'm taking away is that this is like sort of the all-in year for the 49ers. And then after that, it just depends on who gets the contracts this offseason. We'll determine what the 49ers look like in 2025. We're hanging out with Matt Maiocco on the Progressive Guest Line, 49ers insider for NBC Bay Area. Well, let's switch sides to the defense, Matt. Nick Sorensen is in after Steve Wilks last year. How will things be different from what we saw a year ago, where to start the season, I thought the Niners' defense was pretty formidable, but towards the end, especially in the playoffs, it showed some leaks.
Yeah, I think where they kind of went away from what they've been last year was that they brought Steve Wilks in, and he didn't have a background in the system that the 49ers have been running since Kyle Shanahan and his first defense coordinator, Robert Saleh, were here in 2017. And so the idea was, well, let's keep that defense evolving and, you know, bring in somebody who has a background in another defense and kind of teach him what we do. And he can put his own, you know, wrinkles on it and kind of keep that defense, you know, maybe a step ahead of opposing offenses. And it just didn't work. It, you know, they were, it just, it, it wasn't a great fit. I think it was pretty obvious, you know, from early in the season that it wasn't working. So yeah, it certainly wasn't a big surprise that 3 days after the Super Bowl, Kyle Shanahan decides to move on from Steve Wilks and they promote Nick Sorensen, who's been on the staff a couple of years. You know, I guess we hear this every time of year, you know, this time of year with a new coach coming in, it's always, you know, the optimism of, you know, the defensive players liking what the new defensive coordinator has to say and his approach and all that. And that's been certainly been the case this off season. The promotion of Nick Sorensen was met with widespread approval. Then they bring in Brandon Staley too. And so Brandon Staley is, you know, by all accounts, a very smart guy. He's been a defensive coordinator. He's been a head coach. He's assistant head coach and, you know, working underneath Nick Sorensen, and he's been very hands-on. I see him working with defensive backs quite often on just kind of the minutia of playing the position. So again, everything this time of year has been very positive, but you know, talking to Nick Sorensen and Brandon Staley, they seem to be working together quite well. And you know, the roles are still a little bit, the role for Brandon Staley is still a little bit ambiguous, but he's certainly a big time resource for Nick Sorensen to lean on as he enters into the season, designing and calling a defense for the first time.
Yeah, a lot of expectations down there in San Francisco. Win total at 11.5, the highest of any team in the NFC. He is Matt Maiocco, 49ers insider for NBC Bay Area. Matt, we appreciate it, man. Thanks as always and be well.
Great job, Matt.
All right. Thank you very much. Matt. Always my pleasure.
All right, that is Matt Maiocco joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. On the other side, we turn our attention to the hardwood. Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst, will give us his thoughts on tonight's game two of the NBA Finals.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out Jonathan Von Tobel's Finals MVP ladder after Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Go ahead and bet that. That market is open, and I think it's rather interesting in the Finals MVP. We'll ask JVT that coming up here shortly, but make sure you check that out. And many of the more articles that we have on VSiN.com, the newly revamped webpage is awesome, and it'll help you be a better better. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Thank you to Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area, who joined us in the last segment, but joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, I hinted at it, it's our senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel, which you can check out all of his work on VSiN.com and VSiN Primetime weekdays, 6 to 9 Eastern Time here at the network. JVT, good morning. Hope all is well. You had a couple days to now sort of digest what happened in Game 1. Any kind of differences of opinion after what you saw in the first 48 minutes of this series?
Yeah, I mean, I think my difference of opinion when I kind of take in everything, Femi, would just be, look, there's this assumption, right? Like, oh, Dallas has just got to play better. Like, I hear that a lot. It's just a general sentiment of what we saw. And my rebuttal would be, how? Like, outside of Kyrie Irving, he had a very poor shooting night. One of the things the Celtics did, which is why, you know, we talked about this on primetime. If you're a Dallas backer, if you're the Mavericks, why you're worried is that we knew what Boston was going to do defensively. We knew that Kristaps Porzingis was going to be on these wing players. We knew that Jason Tatum was going to play these centers. We knew that they were doing that to eliminate the lob opportunities, to not allow Kristaps Porzingis to get picked on in some of these matchups. They did everything that way, right? And it worked. everything we thought they were going to do with their defensive strategy played out, and it worked exactly how you wanted it to. So my rebuttal is, it's just like, I understand the thought of like, hey, Kyrie Irving should shoot better. We know he's a better player than that. But guys, Luka Doncic on the assists, for example, he had one assist. He only had 6 assist opportunities, which is essentially a pass to a guy who took a shot. They cut those off. They only had 3 corner 3-point attempts in the game total. And one of those came in garbage time when the game was well out of hand, when the guys were all out there just scrubbing up all of the minutes and getting this thing out of there. What Boston can do and did do defensively, I think translates over the course of the rest of this series. And I'll even go back to that third quarter, right? Because a lot of people would point to that third quarter and go, well, see, they got back into it. Luka Doncic did not have a single assist in that stretch in which they got back into that game in the third quarter. It was all isolation work. It was all via him. Kyrie Irving had some buckets as well, but it's not like they got back to that lob city, you know, dunking mentality. We're moving the ball around. Again, it came back to individual competition. And I just think over the course of this series, after watching that, I don't know how much changes for you if you're Dallas. Maybe the degree of the result changes, but in terms of the ultimate result where we get to the end of the series and Boston wins in 5 or 6 games, I don't know why you would think that things just change after we move from that first game.
All right, now that you just destroyed the Dallas Mavericks fan base and they just threw up and they realized they have no chance, okay, since you've just destroyed and broken every heart possible.
It's back to being depressed.
Are you
about
betting
the Cowboys
them on a sweep or 5 games? I mean, like, what are you betting Boston in 4, Boston in 5? Don't give me you can't give that report and tell me you're going to go Boston in 6. I mean, how do you win 2 games after I'm ready to cry. I felt like that was an emotional downfall. So what do you bet, 4 or 5?
My official prediction before the series, Michael, was Boston in 5. So, like, that's what I thought this was going to happen. And we could get some competitive ones.
That negativity there, yes.
Sure, yeah. And I did lay before the series 1.5 games at the very least with Boston. And here's the interesting argument here, guys. So the Celtics -400. You talk to some odds makers. You talk to people who set numbers. And I think Chuck Esposito had a good point. I think it was Jeff Sherman over at the Westgate as well, that before the postseason, Celtics -400 would have been the series price before game 1 for this series. If you looked at it, a couple of the other mathematicians out there, the guys with their models, if you looked at the money line prices for game 1 and then spread that over the course of the series, how that would be priced back in Dallas, -400 should be the price before game 1. So there's an argument to be made here, Michael, that again, if you want to get back into this market in these like laying 1.5 games in an adjusted price, going Boston 4-0, going Boston 4-1 plus 245 does have some theoretical value to it from a number standpoint. But I do think that when you come into this, and this was my whole thought, we got wrapped up in what was a very strong playoff run in the Western Conference for Dallas. We got wrapped up in a playoff run, we'll call it, for the Boston Celtics. But what was ignored, and this is how I put it in my article when I wrote the series preview, was Boston was hiding in plain sight. One of their losses was a Miami Heat loss in which they set a franchise record or tied a franchise record for most made threes and shot 55%. They lost one other game. They had the best net rating in the entire postseason by a mile. The next best team, they were 10.6. The next best team was 6.4. Like, this was a team that was plainly just dominating their opponents, but we weren't giving them enough credit. And even in the Pacers series, each of the last 2 years, the Celtics have an overwhelmingly negative net rating in clutch time, right? Game within 5 points, 5 or fewer minutes left to go. They went 4-0 in the 4 clutch games that they played. They had a plus 43.9 net rating. So quietly along the way, they're answering some of the questions. And I just think that we get to this point, Michael, and they were pretty undervalued as you headed into this series. And you could still make the argument that that's the case when you look at these adjusted series prices, because one could make the argument these should have been the numbers before game 1 that we're looking at right now.
I love it there. We're hanging out with Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst here on the Progressive Guest Line, breaking down the NBA Finals here on a Sunday morning. So we know Boston is great, 64 wins and all the analysis that you had for the postseason, but they've struggled in these game twos. Like, whenever Boston really has a great performance, sometimes they come back down to earth, as we saw in the Cavs series. You mentioned the unprecedented shooting from Miami in the first round. Are you comfortable laying it with them tonight? They're 6.5 right now. The total sitting at 215. Do you go back to the well with the Celtics, or is this Mavericks or pass?
So I think what you see in the market is you see a lot of sharp bettors who like to just blindly play the zigzag, right? So I think that's why we've come back from like 7.5, which is the open, back down to 6.5, which is the opening number here. For me, Femi, it would be Boston or nothing. Like, as somebody who has this Boston prior to the series and has supported them this way, like, I do think there is value in backing down, or excuse me, in Freudian slip, backing Boston here in this spot, because I do think that when you look at their ability to defend, and then guys, on the flip side, we haven't even talked about yet the fact that what is Dallas doing defensively against this team? because one of the things that really sticks out to you in this game and then the one game that they played in March 1st post-trade deadline is that Derek Lively, Daniel Gafford, whoever's going to play the five, is now being brought out of the paint, guys. And that is not good for the best paint defense in the NBA. In game one, the Celtics went 14 of 14 within 4 feet of the basket. The paint was wide open. They were just getting dunks and layups and doing whatever they wanted. In the game they played in the regular season, they shot 68% inside of 14 feet, scored over 60 points in the paint. This is just a matchup that I think does not work for Dallas. So for my money, again, going back to, okay, what changes outside of Luka Doncic, you know, turning into Luka Doncic as we expect him to on any given night, and Kyrie Irving maybe erupting himself for another 30-point performance, you know, and carrying this team, I think that the ability to open this floor up for the Boston Celtics, that's not going anywhere. And I think that leads to a big offensive night for Boston. Full disclosure, I played game one over 214.5. I think you can play that again here. Or if you want to go Boston team total over, I think that's a perfectly plausible scenario too, because I do think that ultimately this is a series that does have a lot of scoring. Game one got out of hand, but these are two teams that I think can do it. So I think more than a side, I'd be looking towards some overs, right? Over 214.5 or maybe over for the Boston Celtics. I think they're going to have some success.
I get depressed with every sentence. I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't even know if I'm going to watch tonight after this. I just get killed here. I mean, all right. So with that backdrop, this rivals Big Daddy is talking about negativity. I mean, this is pretty impressive. However, with that backdrop, Jason Kidd said the best player is Jaylen Brown. Are you buying that for the MVP? I know you've been a Jaylen Brown fan as too.
Yeah, I mean, I think you are, because as Femi mentioned in the read, right, I have my MVP ladder, Michael. And for me, coming into game two, for scoring this like a boxer, essentially, Jaylen Brown won round one. When you go into that game, for me, what made the difference was in that third quarter. So Dallas and Luka hits the step back three. He mean mugs the crowd. They cut it down to eight. Immediately when they come back out of that timeout, in two of the next three possessions, Jaylen Brown gets to the free throw line. He has a block, and then he has another block consecutively on Derek Jones Jr. later in the quarter, in which he's trying to go up for a board and then an offensive rebound. He assists on an Al Horford three to cut it up to 19, and then he hits his own three at the end of the quarter to make it 22. Like, those moments are what's important when you're looking at the whole scheme of things for MVP. And you mentioned it. I was listening to you guys at the open. Michael, Jaylen Brown's just playing extremely well in this postseason. He came into this series shooting 54% from the floor and averaging over 25 points per game. The guy's on one. I've called it the summer of Jaylen Brown, because a lot of the topics are about the disrespect, the not making all MVP or all NBA. Like, this is one where he seems to just kind of be in an FU mode right now, and he is playing at that level. So I think after game one, the leader in the clubhouse is Jaylen Brown for MVP.
Now, here's where I'll push back a little bit here, because will he be the person that the voters gravitate towards? Because I was with you with the conference finals MVP with Jaylen Brown. Like, I thought he should win it, but he was by far the best player in that series, and he barely won conference finals MVP. It was a 5-4 vote. Mm-hmm. If Tatum plays better and they're kind of neck and neck, don't the voters gravitate towards Tatum, who was -115 prior to the start of the series and is now +120?
No, it's totally fair. And I even wrote that in the finals MVP thing, right? Which is like the gravity, as I've called the Femi, of these stars is hard to escape from. But of the two stars' gravitational pulls, like, Luka Doncic is like a black hole. Like, he's going to suck up everything. You're not going to get away from him. Tatum, you can, especially if you have those moments. And I think if you're going another route, Brown would be the guy to do it, especially coming off of an Eastern Conference Finals MVP where the voters who decided did have some respect for him, even though it should have been 9-0.
Yeah, 100%. It should have been 9-0, but these people...
Great work, JVT. Great work.
Yeah, it's excellent.
I went through a box of Kleenexes just now. I went through a box of Kleenexes after that, but it was great job.
Wait for Dallas to win, like, you know, by 25 points after this. It's going to be great.
It's Michael and the entire Metroplex and DFW crying after JVT's analysis. Great stuff as always, JVT, man. Be
a
well.
Box of whole Kleenexes is out of here. Yeah. Thanks, JVT.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're this close to crowning an NBA champion. With the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSiN. That's code VSiN for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi. Thank you to Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst, who joined us in the last segment, which was a tour de force segment from JVT as he was just undressing the Dallas Mavericks organization. All jokes aside, JVT in the Celtics camp, liked them before the series, saw game one. It's hard to argue with them. I mean, hey, if you're in his shoes, you're probably going to be very, very confident after 48 minutes of basketball.
Look, I was kidding JVT, but I mean, he came with back, you know, he's got the analytical numbers to support what he's trying to say, and I get it. And, you know, look, but they still have two of the best players in the world. I don't think Kyrie's going to change. I think he's not going to play as poorly. I hope this is better than what JVT anticipates. But look, you know, he brought the numbers, and I'm sure Dallas is fully aware of the numbers. They have to make an adjustment. This is what Jason Kidd and the coaching staff get paid for, is you're going to have to make an adjustment. They're going to have to see, you know, what they can do differently, if they can change the tenor of the game to shift it to where they have a little bit of an advantage.
Oh, 100%. And JVT also gave us a nice pro tip, which will be our pro tip for the show this morning. And it's pretty simple. If you like the Dallas Mavericks to come back and win this series, Luka Doncic to win finals MVP is the bet. Right now, his price plus 350. The price for the Mavericks to win the series plus 310. I don't see a scenario where Luka is not the finals MVP if Dallas wins.
Good
so
point.
That should be 1-1 as far as I'm concerned. And you're getting a 40-cent break there to get the plus 350. So if you like Dallas, you're backing Luka finals MVP.
I see, this is exactly why you have to get the guide and listen to VSiN on a regular basis, because there are different avenues to accomplish the same thing. You know, we talked about this on our GM Shuffle pod about, you know, Bo Nix betting him to be the fifth quarterback or the sixth quarterback at plus 135 as opposed to Michael Penix when his numbers started to move. There's different ways to create the same results, and it makes money for you as a bettor. And I think you can't be linear in this betting world. You have to find different avenues. And that there, I think, there's no way. If Dallas comes back after being leveled by JVT with no chance, I mean, zero chance to even compete, you know, if they come back and win this thing, you might as well just give the trophy to Luka on the spot. I mean, clearly, because, I mean, they have no chance. I mean, really, Boston looks like they're the greatest basketball team in the history of basketball.
Build the statue for Luka Doncic. But in his defense, like, Boston, in terms of their net rating, and like,
he's got
make
numbers.
About what you will.
I'm not making fun of it.
The numbers said they were an all-time great team. And we just haven't really treated them that way.
We're seeing it. Yeah. And if they continue to play like this, I get it. I'm certainly not suggesting it.
No, I hear you. What do you think happens tonight? The Celtics are 6.5-point favorites. Total is at 215. Would you take the Dallas Mavericks there with the point?
What do you think? I think happens tonight. I think it's over in the first quarter. I'm not even going to watch. You're asking me that question after I just got. Don't even know what truck just hit me. Like, I don't have no idea what truck just hit me. I'm going to take the Mavericks and the points. I think there's some resolve in that team. I think they have a better – I think they can correct some things. I also don't think that Boston's going to shoot as well as – I mean, Horford making those early threes in the game kind of set the tempo, and it created spacing on the court. They got to have an answer for Porzingis. There's no question about that. They have to have that. We'll see if they do or not, but – I'm going to play the talent and the skill level of the best players, and you know, and I'm going to see that. I believe that Jason Kidd and his staff can make some adjustments. Now, look, they're going to have to play their best to win, but I think they're capable of that. I mean, you don't beat the, you know, we talk about how they weren't challenged in the West, but we all said all year the West was by far the best. They beat Minnesota in five. They beat the Clippers in a tough series, and they beat the Thunder in a tough series, which they lost the opening game against the Thunder. So I do think there's a resolve here. I would take the points. Look, if they get blown out again, I'll retreat like a good army, you know, and say, all right, JVT, you're right. But I'm maybe it's my fandom. I don't know. I'm rooting for them.
Yeah, if they don't win tonight, maybe it is the Boston Celtics coronation of this NBA Finals. But for me, I agree with you that I would go Mavericks or pass. I still haven't decided whether I want to bet the Mavericks or not. The bet that I did make in this game is we're climbing the Luka Doncic ladders. I like the over on Luka's points over 31.5. That was at -120 here at Circa this morning. I also played some of the alts. I have over 34.5 at +120, and I have over 39.5. Just a little bit of a sprinkle over 39.5 at 3-1. So Luka to have a 40-point game, 3-1. Doncic has been awesome in these games off of losses in the postseason. I mean, in his career, he averages 34.2 points per game, 50% from the field, 40% from three-point range after a playoff loss. His team is 11-6 in those games. Like, Luka responds really well when his team is down. He's had a couple of days to sort of kind of look at the film, see how Boston is sort of defending him. I think we'll see. Like, Luka was really good in game one. I think he'll be even better in this game, game two. And in game one, he had 30 points in that game. And he had 27 or so, I believe it was, midway through the third quarter before they took him out in the fourth once it became a blowout. So I like Luka Doncic over points and even some alt overs over 35 and also over 39.5 for Luka Doncic. So those are my bets for the game. And maybe I'll talk myself into a little bit of Mavericks, but I'm still trying to get there. I mean, like you, Michael, that JVT analysis there for game two, I was like, whew, I might need to reconsider this Dallas thing for game two. I'll consider to think about that. But I do like Luka Doncic to have a big night tonight.
Yeah, well, I mean, you, it's a bold statement, what you just did there, but I think you got to look, it's one game. I don't think you can go off. I mean, it's going to be a little bit more than just one game, right? I think you have to kind of take a peek at that and see, and we'll see if it works out. I don't know. I'm going to go by the landscape of what they've been able to accomplish and who they've beaten to get here before I'm going to ready to go in on that.
Yeah, and the finals MVP prices, as we discussed with Jonathan Von Tobel, is Jason Tatum is still your favorite at +120. Jaylen Brown is +310. Luka +350. Porzingis is the guy that's +550. That was the big mover that we saw from game one to game two. I think that's just a little bit of an overreaction to just what we saw in that performance. I mean, I don't think Porzingis is going to shoot the ball that well the rest of this series. He's a terrific player, both offense and defense. What he was able to do at the rim, 35-1 to +550. That is a massive move, but I think that just may be a little bit of recency bias kicking in there. We tend to see that happen every now and then with NBA Finals. We overreact to that game one. I remember 2 years ago, Michael, when Al Horford had the big game against the Golden State Warriors. He made all these three-point shots, and then everyone was talking about Horford MVP, and then by game three, that was like an afterthought. So you can't overreact too much to what we see.
But I will say this. I'll push, as you say to me, I'll push back on you on this one. Porzingis is really a problem for him. And the Celtics did look like an entirely different team with him on the court. And I think JVT is right about that. And I think if he comes out and puts another 20 points in 21 minutes, that 35-1 will go down to 17-1 in a hurry here now. So I would sprinkle some pizza money on him. I know that Brown and Tatum, but what is obvious to voters is what's fresh to voters. And this Porzingis element has been the issue. Now, if Dallas solves it in this one, you've wasted a pizza. But if they don't, he becomes the wild card, and we talked about it all. We talked about it while he was hurt. What impact is he going to have on this game? And the other night, it was significant. They didn't have an answer for him, and he made everybody else a better player. And now you got all your Knicks fans. I mean, I spent most of my 2 days off listening to Knicks fans repeating how much they hated the Porzingis pick, right? Mm-hmm. Did you remember? Did you listen to any of this on Twitter or Instagram?
Oh, I remember.
I mean, they're going crazy at Phil Jackson's nuts. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there. We picked Jahlil Okafor. You know, we didn't even go work out Porzingis, you know? And I'm like telling people all the time, like, wait a minute, I don't understand this. If we're in a tanking mode, why wouldn't we take a projection? We didn't take a Giannis, and now we – anyway, it just comes back to stupidity. But to me, I think it's actually worth it, Femi. I really do. I think it's worth it if he has one, because he could play another great game.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly talented enough. I did enjoy the receipts from Knicks fans who were angry at the Porzingis draft pick on draft night. I remember that on draft night. They were like, who is this Porzingis guy and this and that? And then he actually made the All-Star team when he was on the Knicks. And unfortunately, he tore his ACL and things didn't work out there with him and Phil Jackson, and they traded him away. But yeah, he's always had this potential. He is one of those guys that people dubbed a quote-unquote unicorn with what he's able to do, shooting and rim protecting and the mobility at that size, 7'3". It's an added element compliment to this Boston Celtics team that got him, and they needed him at this NBA Finals. They got him, and he played really, really well in Game 1. Well, that does it for us here on the Lombardi Line. Enjoy the game tonight, Michael. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman. For Michael Lombardi, the entire crew behind the glass, I'm Femi Bebefe, saying good luck with all the bets. The Handle with Matt Brown and Mike Somich is coming up next.